Welcome back to the Act Two Podcast, a podcast for the real life working screenwriter. I'm Tasha Yu.
I am Josh Hallman.
And as a reminder, Act Two is a network and support group for the everyday working screenwriter, of which this podcast is just one of the things that we do. So thank you for joining us here. You can also subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on our topics. You can give us a rating, write a comment, good, bad, speak your truth. You could also DM us if you want. Questions, topic suggestions, those are always really great to talk to you guys over email. You can reach out to us at act2writers@gmail.com or on our Instagram and Twitter at act2writers. And we post a lot of writing stuff, a lot of writing questions, a lot of writing thoughts.
Yeah.
Screenwriting career stuff is great. And then we're also on the things. I'm Story Thursday on Instagram and Tasha3.0 on Twitter.
I'm Joshua Hallman on Twitter, Josh Hallman on Instagram.
Today, Joshua.
Yes.
Today is one of our favorite days. Today is when we talk about this week in writing as our episode.
Yeah, I love it. It's the things that we talk about in life at all times. And it fires me up every single time we talk about it. I have stuff to want to talk about and I'm excited. Let's just dive into it. You ready?
I'm ready.
What if I was like, I have nothing?
You go.
Am I starting? Am I getting this off my chest? Okay.
Let's go.
I had a conversation with someone.
Okay.
Mysterious. A producer.
Okay.
We're talking about screenwriting. We're talking about just stories. We were talking about how kind of stories fall apart sometimes and like how in like second act, like act 2B, things can kind of fall apart. It was an interesting conversation because real casually, this producer was like, you know, in act one, you set your beliefs and you set your desires. And then he was like, you know, and then as you go throughout the story, you make choices based off of the beliefs and the desires.
Make it sound so easy.
And so we were just breaking down story a little bit. And afterwards, I thought about it and I was just like, you know what? It's true. Like beliefs and desires are everything. That's like ties into theme. It ties into your emotional arc. It ties into everything. And it just, I feel like a lot of things can fall apart if you do not set what your character's themes or your character's beliefs or desires are, because that like pushes the plot. Like that determines all of the choices that your characters make throughout the story. And I just wanted to bring that up because to me, it just was really helpful.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like when it comes to screenwriting books and stuff and people who have these turns of phrases, like beliefs and desires, doesn't actually help me. However, if I just took a second, the last couple scripts I've written, including the one we're writing together, I feel like I was able to get through act two in a much stronger, confident way when I was coming at it less from a place of, all right, what generally needs to happen in season two, or what structure points do I need to hit, or insert terrible way to write act two here. And it was better when I was like, what does my character want right now? And how would they go about getting it? Okay, they either succeed at doing that or they don't. But now I have a clear next scene. Then after that scene, now that this has happened to my character, what do they want and how did they get it?
Yeah.
And then just like rinse, repeat until you get through act two. And I think the more that I can learn to do that, because act two is my wasteland, the stronger I'll be as a writer. So I guess let's check back when Tasha learns how to do this.
Oh, God. No way. But no, you're right. It's so simple. But I think it's just so often forgotten. It's like, hey, what does my character want here?
Yeah. We were just, what you and I were just sharing with each other, a David Lynch video, right? Where he's like, he was asked, how do you write a screenplay? And he's like, well, I take a card and I write a scene. And I take another card and I put that underneath it and I write another scene.
Yeah.
It was just like this smart ass remark of basically, I make my character do one thing and then do another thing and then do another thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's so simple. That's the craziest part about screenwriting is like, it's so simple, but it's the most difficult thing in the entire world. Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you need your character to go over here, because that's the destination of the movie in your head. but they don't want to do that because of their beliefs and their desires.
Yeah.
And the movie that sucks is the one where you make them do it anyway. The movie that's great is the one where you're willing to change what the movie is because you realize your character's belief and desires are actually going to take them this way.
Yeah. So that's it. That's how I wanted to kick off this. You know, that's something I you know, I just wanted to bring up.
I'm fired up now too.
There we go. Yeah, I can sense it.
My first this week in writing is I've been talking about this pitch that I am doing, and I'll find out actually this week if I've gotten the job or if my month's worth of work was for naught. So TBD on that one. But I wanted to talk about one part of the process that happens all the time and is super important that I don't think we talk enough about, which is how oftentimes when you pitch and your pitch is good, you will make it to additional rounds of pitching. Very rarely are you ever just going to get one pitch and it's over.
Somehow.
Because usually you're going to pitch to the junior execs first and they're going to give you notes on what they think their boss wants, on how they think you should pitch it differently, or just their own whims and what they think the movie or TV show should be. And then you're going to pitch maybe them again before they send you off to their bosses. Or maybe you'll go right to their bosses. And then if you're pitching to a producer who ultimately wants to sell your pitch to a studio, it's even more rounds of notes with all the producers. It's all that process. And then we got to go do it to the studio. And then if at the studio, it's usually the junior exec first. And then they take it to the... So it's fucking infinite numbers of pitches, which is all to say... My this week in writing is I got notes on my pitch.
Okay.
And I addressed those notes and they really liked how I addressed them. And it occurred to me because they were actually usually like no one really reacts when you pitch, at least for me. Like there's just such a level of like lackluster excitement at the end of a pitch.
Mm-hmm.
But these people were very much like, oh, like, thank you so much for addressing our notes. And you did it in such a really great way. I really appreciate that, that it sort of sparked in me like, oh, this is something to talk about, to remember to do, because not only are you giving them a better pitch because you're addressing the notes that they would love you to address, but it shows them that if they hired you as a writer, you will also be able to take notes of theirs when you get into the script writing process, and that you're going to find creative solutions on how to address their notes in the script writing process. And they can see that already and how you're doing their pitch. And I say creative solutions because they gave me notes and I could have just inserted their notes. And that's not what I did. I thought about their notes, thought about, okay, given what they want, how do I stick with the pitch that I love, but also give them what they want? And ultimately, when you get to script, you're going to have to do the same thing. So that's just a reminder that that's pitching.
Yeah.
I guess.
So wait, when do we find out when you've booked the job? When do we celebrate?
This time next week, we'll have an answer.
Okay. No,
we'll
I like this.
We'll celebrate or we'll be drinking either way.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's go.
Wow, we're jumping. I love this. Fucking this week in writing. All right, something happened on Twitter the other week.
Oh.
Which I was a little late to, but then I sent you the link.
Oh.
And it was about this fifth grader who he's in the Hollywood Reporter, and basically he had teamed up with these two other screenwriters who are veteran screenwriters, and he's pitching and making Home Alone meets The Godfather. Okay. So that was a very poor way of explaining that. So let me just read a little excerpt from this Hollywood Reporter article. The headline is "Just What Hollywood Needs, a 10-year-old screenwriter." Okay, so this is a part. For several months now, fifth grader Connor Esterson has been meeting with 64-year-old Green Book scribe Nick Vallelonga and 68-year-old Bad Boys writer George Gallo to develop Little Wise Guy, Esterson's screenplay about a boy who befriends an aging mobster living next door. Home Alone meets The Godfather is how Esterson described his high-concept comedy, although he's never seen The Godfather. So I'm bringing this up.
That's in it.
That's in it. That's in parentheses. So I'm only bringing this up because it caused a little problem on Twitter. I was late to it, and everyone was like, "What the hell?" And to add on to it, he was in Spy Kids. This little actor, and I guess he had this idea, and he's just been meeting with these writers, and has just been trying to develop this. And it seems this is my personal opinion, to me it seems insane to be like we're up in arms about such a, this seems like
An innocent thing.
Yeah, like he's a 10-year-old kid. Like
are they mad because he's 10 and they don't have the opportunity of a 10-year-old and like they're just frustrated?
I think there might be a little nepotism, anger brewing somewhere in there.
Wait, is it nepotism or just that he was an actor and therefore like had opportunity because he worked in the industry?
So he showed his family friend who's a producer who then ended up taking it to the screenwriters.
Got it. Okay. So, I mean, opportunity having, luck of the draw in terms of family friends.
Luck of the draw. But this is all to say, I mean, listen, I'm excited for this little 10-year-old boy who can come up with Home Alone Meets the Godfather, which, cool, let's do it.
Can I just say, anyone can come up with a good idea.
Correct.
Including 10-year-olds. And this happened all the time in the studio system. It happens all the time currently in the studio system where a studio executive will go home for the weekend. They'll hang out with their kids.
Yeah.
Their kid will say something. Their kid will say, I wish there was a movie about monster trucks. Or I wish, kids, you know better what their brains are like. Crazy.
Did you say monster trucks for a specific reason?
Yes.
Okay.
Because that was the brainchild of a child.
Yeah, a four-year-old.
Yes, exactly. So this happens all the time where execs will come back to work on a Monday and they always have a Monday morning meeting with, it's like an all hands on deck with all the creative executives. And they say, what did you read this weekend? What did you watch this weekend? Is there anything that you love? And they will come and say, my kid said this. We should do a movie about this because this kid has their finger on the zeitgeist. This is what kids want. And they'll run with it. They'll make fucking full millions of dollars movies based on this hangout with their kids over the weekend.
Totally.
So this is not new. Nobody panic. We're all okay.
Well, the thing is, I think kids are just so pure. And when you hang around a child and they come up with some silly idea, honestly, I've heard other kids and kids that they'll come up with ideas and you're like, oh my God, it comes from a pure place. You're not thinking about the logistics of how to make X, Y, or Z. You know, like they'll come up with things and it's like, yeah, that's a really good idea. And if I spent time thinking about this, I could probably crack a really good story based off of this concept. I think, I don't know. I just think people were kind of rubbed the wrong way by I think it was kind of awesome. I don't know.
Yeah.
Fuck cares.
For you, Josh.
I mean, listen, if I had Home Alone Meets the Godfather just in my back pocket.
It's a great idea. I don't even know what that movie is.
I don't know what that movie is either. And I mash things together.
Yeah, good for them. It feels like I just want you to write Witch of Green Grove so that you could have your kid lives next door to a witch movie.
It's coming.
Anyway.
It's coming. Stand by.
Okay. Back to Twitter for mine.
Let's go.
LucasJK616 asked,
oh,
newer writers, how do you deal with contradicting feedback from two different readers? And I love this question, and I want to talk about it.
This is great.
Because Josh and I, no secret, are in a writer's group together. And so there are constantly different feedbacks, right? Like, oftentimes, let's just say, Josh will say, I think that I didn't like the direction of this character. I didn't like that he became a fireman. And it seemed to really detract from his personal family story. And then I'll be like, I don't mean to disagree with Josh, but I loved the firefighter angle. I think that made him more of a hero, more of a family figure, like whatever. And so now, like, our job as readers, as fellow members of a writer's group, is to say, here's all the shit. We're throwing spaghetti at you, the writer, of all the things we reacted to and what they made us feel when we read your stuff. And it's your job to go take all of that shit back home with you, sift through it, find the gold. I lost my spaghetti metaphor, but find the gold through this and then write the best next version. So as a reader, it's very common for you to get thrown completely different things. It's then your job, and it's very, very hard to sort of figure out, okay, which direction do I want to go? The fireman route or not the fireman route? And I think, Josh, like, I would love your opinion on this for sure, because there's sort of, it depends on every situation and every script. But for me, my true north when I get completely contradictory feedback is what would make the best version of the movie I see in my head what feels true to the vision that I have, to the story that's in my heart and soul that I want to be telling on this page. And if it really feels super important that he's a fireman, then I'm going to just run with that version. And I will say that sometimes I have run with that version and realized after I've done it and tried it that actually the non-fireman version was right? Like that other person was right. But I couldn't figure that out. I couldn't see that until I got through it. And sometimes that's just how it goes. But that's how I decipher between who to listen to when I get contradictory feedback.
It is tough. Sometimes in the writer's group, at least, I'll just check the temperature of everyone. And if there's two contradictory notes that come to each other, and then like there's like a passionate plea for one of the notes, that like I'll take it into consideration, but it is a very difficult thing. You just kind of have to sit with it. Sometimes you just have to try it. I think I do exactly what you do. If it's something that's sticking with me, then I think you kind of have to really explore that and kind of let go of the ego and just dive into it and be like, okay.
I think you said something interesting too about if you get contradictory feedback, you then sort of ask everyone in writer's group, like, which side do you fall? So you can get this sort of additional feedback. I think that's an important thing. If you can ask from these two readers who've given you different feedback, why have you given me this note? Because that's actually more helpful than the note they're giving it itself, especially if it's contradicting.
Yeah.
Because if they're really truly opposites, obviously both versions can't work at the same time. So finding out more of what's behind their note, like if it's not about the fireman thing at all, it's really about this person being a family guy and like that fireman piece is really distracting. Like, okay, then that is the note you understand to address. They just have different solutions for how to solve that note. So yeah, feedback, asking feedback from your reader a bit more in a very nice way. Can you tell me a little bit more about why you felt that way is really how to ask that is a great way of finding out.
I think that's it, because you're the master of the note behind the note. You can always kind of like extract it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Where's this coming from? Like, why are you feeling this way? Not getting too combative, just trying to get that feeling.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a semi-controversial this week in writing. Maybe.
I'm here for it.
So we've gotten some messages. I've gotten some messages. I've talked to someone. They were asking about the Blacklist.
Yeah.
The website, the Blacklist.
Mm-hmm.
And there were certain people who felt as though the Blacklist would give you ratings that were a 7.
Mm-hmm.
In order to lure writers back into submitting again, because if you get an 8, then I think you kind of get pushed through the Blacklist system, and then you also get free reads, I believe, because it's very hard to get an 8. And I'm only bringing this up because I think a lot of listeners and people we've talked to have brought this up. We've even on some of our Zooms that we've done, it's been brought up. And so, well, number one, I was going to see if you've heard anything about this, which I don't know from your reaction and look, I don't think you have. But two, anyone listening, if they've experienced this, I want to get to the bottom of this, because I don't think the Blacklist is like this nefarious site. Like, but I feel like a lot of times people are kind of like projecting it in that way to be like, oh man, they're just trying to get an 8. I'm going to submit again.
I'm of multiple minds. I am familiar with it. And my day, it was $25 to host. I think it's now $100, someone said.
Wow.
So this is taking a lot of money. Like, even $25 a month for me on an assistant salary is difficult to cough up that kind of money for something that was an uncertain fate, a carrot that's maybe there, maybe not. And I don't know, I have friends who do this and are like, you know, fighting the coverage struggle of, do I get an 8 or 7, or how much money do I put into this until I can finally get an 8? Do I address their notes so I can get an 8, even if I don't agree with the notes? And like, at the end of the day, I don't know. I mean, I have never heard of someone who got an 8 and then their career was launched.
Yeah.
The benefit is, I know they email your script out, and people who subscribe to the Blacklist, including producers and and managers and agents will see this, and there is potential of you getting repped or even starting to get meetings. I know all of that is true and possible, but my point is it's not the only way, and it's not the end all to be all, and it's not shooting you into the stratosphere. So like, if this is difficult for you and you don't trust it, and that is a huge weight on your finances every month, there are other options that I think are more valuable. And I know contests and film festivals often still cost money, but that end result to me feels more tangible. Like Josh has talked about being able to go to the Austin Film Festival to meet with people. And I know on certain, like Nichols Fellowship, I've gotten meetings off of being on the semifinals of the Nichols Fellowship. Like those feel important. Getting that, chasing the eight, I don't feel like is as important a tool in your tool chest as all the other things we have talked about on this podcast.
Chasing the eight should be the name of a script.
I could see that be like the struggle of a screenwriter, chasing the eight.
Chasing the eight.
Someone write that.
I think I've told you this. Don't know if I've read this or talked to someone about this, but there used to be this person who would be like, okay, you know, they would take like an inventory or, excuse me, an evaluation of like people in their company. And they would ask like their right-hand man, like, okay, tell me what you think about Tasha out of a scale of 1 to 10, but you can't use the number 7 because it was such a simple way to be like, yeah, 7, you know, and like that means it's like,
I like her, but she's not great. She's not like the best, but she's great. Yeah, she's
and
fun.
It can go either way. And then it almost puts it on the other person. And then, so if you say a 6, like that's low. An 8? That's high. Like that's close to 10. I don't know, man. I think the 7 should be eliminated from all rankings in the world. I'm pro world. Anti 7.
What if when Tomb Raider comes out, it gets a 70%?
It's a 7. It's a 7.0 on Rotten Tomatoes.
I want to like disappear for the month that it comes out.
I don't want to
see people trashing the show that I love.
What are you talking about? You should come freaking appear more than ever because it's going to be a great show. I already know that. It's going to be 100.
I'm going to book a flight to the middle of nowhere.
It's going to be
great. We'll do this podcast in the dark room somewhere.
Hi, welcome back to the Act 2 podcast.
my voice will be obscured like in this whistleblower. I don't know what I'm talking about.
No, I know. Is there a story with like Spielberg when he thought, I think Jaws or something was going to be a complete failure, and then he ends up like he went to like Hawaii or something like that, and then it was obviously Jaws, and he was like, oh.
I feel like I've heard stories about that, and definitely people always, when something comes out, they're just like so exhausted, they leave for a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, I forget who that was. Yeah, they left because they like, I don't want to see all how terrible
and then
the
he
reactions
like,
to this are going to be.
God, I can't. Anyway, Tomb Raider is going to be awesome. That was it about The Blacklist. I just wanted to bring that up because, and I just want to say, I'm pro Blacklist Franklin Leonard.
I got my start from The Blacklist. So this is coming from someone who actually their career did get started because of ratings.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, it all... It all crumbles.
It all crumbles.
I very much love The Blacklist, but anyway.
But yeah. I was willing to put that strain on my bank account to do that. And I wasn't, I don't remember chasing a rating. I just remember it feeling important to have it hosted on The Blacklist.
Yeah.
So that I could have, when I didn't, potentially direct like access to people reading my stuff who might not be otherwise. So like that was the value to me. And then, I mean, it is crumbling. And then because my script was rated at a certain point, again, I wasn't chasing a rating. It just happened to get rated, I think like an 8 or higher or whatever.
Yeah.
I qualified for one of the Blacklist programs. So if you are trying to deliberately apply to one of their programs, they have an annual labs program and looks like an episodic lab program. If that's interesting to you and you have to be at a certain rating to get into them, then, and you can afford it, great. But again, there are other options too.
I also want to say, this is not like things are crumbling in what we're saying. I'm going to sound like such an old individual, but things were a little different like 7 years ago or 8 years ago or whenever The Blacklist started. 10 years ago?
Well, 10 years ago is when it happened to me.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So time flies and I'm going
to... I know.
I'm gonna
we're old now.
Pass out. But
okay.
That's all to say, things were different back then. That's all.
Yeah.
Back in our day. Okay. Do you have any more?
Do you want me to do a real one or a fun one next? Do we end on the fun one?
Do a real one, end on the fun one, because I don't know if okay. I have any more.
Okay. My real one, it comes from an email from a listener who asked, which script notes do you address and which do you ignore? And that is, of course, adjacent to what we talked about before, but it is a bit more specific. What script notes do you address? Which script notes do you ignore? Joshua, you've just gone to Writer's Group. Let's paint a picture. You've submitted your latest feature script.
Yeah.
We've given you all of our thoughts, including our page notes. When you go home, who are you saying, you fuck off, but you I'm going to definitely do? Is there a method to your madness?
There's like different tiers. Like there's the ones where you're like, absolutely not. I'm not going to address this.
Seen Josh literally say to someone to their face, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. Like interrupting that person and being like, I'm not doing that.
Well, it's just to save time. It's just
because you knew in your heart of hearts that like that just is not the direction you wanted your movie to go in.
It was like, you know what? That's going to change the direction. We're not going to do this. What I'm saying in my head is, hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time and energy you've given to this script and what you're about to say. But no, we can just move on to the next one because I don't want to waste everyone else's time. You know what? I've seen you do it too. I've seen you be like, I'm not doing that.
I appreciate what you're saying right now, but I'm not going down that road.
You're so much more like diplomatic and just nicer.
I get really flustered when I have to do that though. I don't know. Do you notice that? Can you tell?
No.
Wait.
I just know you, so I just...
When I'm like at all confrontational, you can tell, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
I guess this is all to say, there is no specific method that I have. Actually, I have to sit with the notes for a long time, and then I'll just keep revisiting them. This has taken a little while to perfect, but I'll have to give it a few days. And sometimes I'll check in with you or Dave after writer's group and be like, okay, so can I ask you what you feel about this? What you feel about that? And like,
we do that a lot. We check in with each other a few days afterwards. It's just like, how are you thinking about notes? And then sometimes we'll have to talk through some of the notes again. So it's not always instantly, you know what to address.
Yeah.
Like which notes to take and which to ignore.
How do you know? What do you take?
It's definitely a gut thing. I have in my head, I'm thinking about last night, very late last night, I was revising a script and talking to my other executive producer who's on the project, and he had a note on something where he wanted a dialogue change because he didn't say why, actually. He just said, can this character say this instead? And I was like, I don't really like that, but I tried it. And then I looked on the page and I reread the scene and I was like, I still don't like it. My gut telling me that I don't like it is it's still staying here. If I wrote it, and my gut changed, that would be different. But my gut was still saying, I don't like it here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked him, why do you feel like you want to change it? Because this is what I feel like is happening when we change the line, which is the character feels, it feels like the scene is more obvious, basically was the problem. And that everything is less funny because he wanted something that was a bit more explained in the dialogue. Because it turns out he was confused by how the characters were reacting to each other. So he thought his solution was, if we make the dialogue more obvious, then the confusion will disappear. My reaction was, once I saw it and processed it, was actually, if we change just how the characters react, like if I change actually the action direction of the scene and leave the dialogue exactly the same, then I think that will solve your problem. So again, which script notes to address and which to ignore, because he was my executive producer, I tried it. I really wanted to get to the root of what he was talking about. And at the end of the day, there are sometimes I get notes like that where, hey, do we change this dialogue? And I'm like, that's fine. Like, it doesn't bother me. It's not what I would pick.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite way of saying that. But like, if that makes that scene make some more sense to you, I can let that go. This was one where my gut was like, I'm reacting to something here. So same with the Twitter comment from before. It's all a gut check.
Yeah.
I think we don't listen to our gut enough when it comes to taking notes and deciding which ones we leave.
It kind of comes down to having the confidence of knowing your characters. I feel like a lot of times if you don't know your characters, that can come out.
Point.
You can see it. And if someone's like, oh, like I've been defensive before, and it comes from a place of not knowing my character.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I think it's taken me a long time to get to a place where I feel like I'm sort of the puppet master of the screenplay.
Yeah.
And you can like give me notes, but I know I have like the bird's eye view of what this needs to be.
Yeah.
And I am the keeper of it. And so notes that will make it better, I will take upon me, and notes that don't make sense, I will get rid of. And I think that is a confidence issue. It's like, it's really believing that you know the characters better than anyone, that you know the world better than anyone, and that, yeah, this is the truest story you could tell.
Damn, that's beautiful. Let's go. Fun one. Let's end on a high note. Okay, fun one.
By the time this episode comes out, WrestleMania will have already happened, Joshua. But you and I have been talking about WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I don't know if people out there know, but The Rock is back.
Yeah, they should know.
And he's trying to bring back the Attitude Era, which is like the 90s era. Like
trying?
A lot of people, he's succeeding. He's trying and succeeding and bringing back this like really intense era where what was so cool about it was there was the line between what was real and what was just fake for TV professional wrestling blurred. And you had people like watching the clips that would happen on the show of like two people beating each other up, and then the camera would cut to black, and then you had kids and adults calling the cops being like, you need to get over to such and such wrestler's house because he's dead, right? And that is starting to happen again now, where those lines are being blurred. And as a storyteller, and this is how I got into wrestling, was realizing the storytelling aspect of the show was what fascinated me. Like, as a storyteller, I think what's happening now in wrestling is amazing.
Well, I'm so happy we ended on this. We should have started because it would have been a full hour. So as a little backstory.
Bring it.
I was a huge wrestling fan growing up. I was in on the Attitude Era. And then I sort of lost my way along the way. But every once in a while, you know, on social media, I'll kind of see what's going on. And I check in and I see what's happening. I'll talk to Paul. I'll talk to Tasha. I'll be like, all right, yeah, this is current thing that's happening right now with The Rock is without question the closest thing to the Attitude Era.
100%. It's so good.
And he has somehow managed to take his public persona, which we all know as like the nicest guy ever. Mm-hmm. And by the way, he's still the nicest guy. Like, he's still The Rock on social media. And then he organically blurted in with, it's all about character, by the way. Jesus.
All about character.
Organically blurted into the wrestling, the WWE. And then, like, he's still himself, but he's also, like, believable as this terrible person. But he's not terrible. Mm-hmm. He's speaking the truth, man. He's coming back. It's unbelievable what he's done.
It's unbelievable. And what's so great is this, like, the storytelling that's happening at WrestleMania between in this match that Josh is talking about with The Rock and Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, the storytelling of this section of WrestleMania has been developing over the course of years.
Yeah.
And it's not totally planned, which is like the amazing part about sort of improv and like fly by the seat of your pants storytelling that is wrestling, is that they could never plan for this moment to happen. However, because of like story that has happened years ago, they're like, ooh, we can use that to leverage it into this and then like grow the story this way. And then it just continues to grow into this beast that you really emotionally care about because it's been years in the making. Like, there's no other television shows that are like this. I just watched a girl on Instagram crying, bawling her eyes out because she thought The Rock killed Cody Rhodes on TV.
There's
no way. She
thought
he was dead. And she was like, he killed my best friend.
Really?
She was sobbing. And her mom had to like console her and be like, he's not dead. It's okay. But this is where lines start getting blurred. Like, because
what?
Kids. She's Josh, like, what? Kids.
That, man. But you watch it, even although we're like, this is sports entertainment, you're still watching and being like, but man, I don't know, man. He's like real pissed. He's spitting some truth over there. And it is interesting also because it's like just in a form of storytelling, it's kind of bled outside of the medium and it's bled outside of, all right, we're watching this on TV or wherever we're watching it. And now it's kind of gone into their social media feeds, and it's like, like it's an extension of who they are, but they're openly like entertainers, but they're also like, that's what I think is so brilliant about what's happening with The Rock is he's like, yeah, I'm an entertainer, but I'm also like the greatest entertainer in the WWE, and nobody's been better, and I'm back, and it's now time for me to show you. And he's done it, man. He's so cool. Oh my God.
Josh, you want to come over and watch WrestleMania with us?
I was actually surprised that they're doing The Rock on Saturday. I don't want to get into WrestleMania predictions here, but
I'm surprised as well. That's an end of Sunday situation.
Well, we can get off topic here, but I have a feeling, or I'm off podcast, but I have a feeling The Rock's going to be making a Sunday appearance. I have a feeling as well. I have a prediction of what's going to happen at WrestleMania with The Rock.
This is going to come out after WrestleMania. Do you want to give your prediction now?
Oh my God, yeah. So I think The Rock and Roman Reigns are going to beat the ever-loving shit out of Cody Rhodes, and I think The Rock is going to succeed. But I think that Cody Rhodes is going to end up winning the title from Roman Reigns on Sunday. And I think there's going to be a little infighting between Roman Reigns and The Rock. But I 100%. Think this, yeah, of course. But I think this is going to be the moment that I think The Rock is going to do his thing. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think Cody Rhodes is going to win the title. And
I agree with everything you just said. And yet I still can't wait to watch it.
What else is happening on Saturday?
This is only this. It's like 8 hours of Wrestle Television.
I don't even watch. I haven't watched it. I'm going to be checking in and be like, ooh, what happened? Is The Rock okay?
It's the coolest form of storytelling. It's so different.
It's okay. Awesome. Okay.
That's it. That's my last thesis in writing. Quote of the day. When I was 16 or 17, I wanted to be a writer, but everything I wrote, I thought was weak. And I can remember falling asleep in tears because I had no talent the way I wanted to have. Francis Ford Coppola. Please remember to rate and subscribe. Follow us at @2Writers for more awesome writing stuff. You can follow me, Tasha, at Story Thursday on Instagram or on Twitter at Tasha3.0.
I'm Joshua Hallman on Twitter, Josh Hallman on Instagram.
And as always, the Act Two podcast is a production of Act Two, a network and support group for the everyday working screenwriter. This episode was edited by Paul Lundquist.